Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and I'm really pleased to welcome back today Barb Larson. Barb is a horticulture educator from UW Extension in Kenosha County. She's been with us a number of times on the show, and we generally, Barb, we get all over the map, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do, and that's fine.
Trees, lawns, veggies, flowers.
Whatever we want to talk about.
Diseases.
As long as we think warm.
Yeah, think warm, and today's a hard day to think. It's hard to think warm today.
Yeah, when it's snowing. You know, I have a master gardener that blamed me for all of this snow because I was about 2 weeks ago when it was warm and dry. I said, you know, we really could use precipitation, and that's the snow is how we get it in the wintertime. And so she says, all of this is my fault now.
All of it's your fault. And this really is a busy time of the year for you and people in your field.
It is. In Kenosha and Racine, we started Master Gardener training this week, so we have the volunteer training going. We have a lot of programs. Our commercial landscape program is starting in a couple of weeks. We're talking about Garden Expo and trying to start getting ready for those kinds of things, too. So, yeah, most people say, what do you do all winter? I said, I am really busy all winter.
It
sounds strange.
You'd think it'd be just the
opposite. I know. But this is program time and teaching time, and of course, with the extension, that's what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, speaking of education, if you have a question that you something you'd like to be educated about, or something you'd like to learn about relating to your flowers or your veggies or your lawn or your trees, I hope you'll join in today. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. We did have Lauren post something on our Facebook page, a question regarding propagation of thornless blackberries. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to help on this one or not, but let's see. I have what I believe to be Chester thornless berries, planted in 2006 on a ridgetop in Crawford County. Plenty of sun, marginal soil fertility, some all-purpose fertilizer used in the past 2 years. I get few, if any, berries. Nice, lush plants.
Mm-hmm.
That
usually says too much fertilizer,
yeah.
But if it's marginal soil fertility, I guess I would look, it's plenty of sun. That's good, because we always look at balancing fertility with sun. The other thornless blackberries are not as hardy as thorny blackberries. Mm-hmm. And true blackberries are only marginally hardy in Wisconsin. Now, Crawford County, right along the, you know, Wisconsin-Illinois line, you're more apt to be able to grow thornless. But it gets pretty darn cold in the winter over there. And the problem may be a winter hardiness problem. Even though the plants are growing really nicely, what may be going on is that the flower buds are being cold damaged instead. So you can grow leaves and the canes or stems, but it's damaging the flower buds. So it may be trying either thorny blackberries or, I love blackberries too, but it's tough. Over on my side of the state in Kenosha, we're enough warmer that we can usually get away with it, especially near the lake. But on the west side, that may be the problem.
Well, we have some callers on the line. Let's see if I can raise somebody up here. Darcy in Brookfield, let's go to you. Hi, Darcy.
Good morning. I love your show. I love your guests. And,
thank you.
Especially when it has to do with gardening.
All right.
Good.
I'd like to make a raised garden in my backyard on top of my lawn.
Okay.
And I have a couple of questions. What kind of border can I use to contain it? And what kind of soil do I use to put in it?
All right. And how high a raised bed do you want? Do you want it just kind of the typical 6 or 8 inches, 12 inches?
I think about 12 inches, something that I don't have to bend down too far.
Okay. All right. You can basically, you don't have to have a box if you don't want to. You can actually just mound up the soil if you want to do it that way. That's fine. I would use a lot of compost in there or mixed compost and your soil in there so you have a nice high organic matter mix. If you want kind of the box look, you can make it whatever you like the looks of. So if you want the typical kind of boards box, that's fine. But I've also seen raised beds made out of everything from pavers to, you know, stonework to brickwork. Obviously more expensive, but if it's in your backyard and you want kind of a more finished look in the landscape, you can go with something like that. Or you can have a more finished kind of box or framework for it too out of wood. So it's basically whatever you like the looks of to do. Couple of hints on raised beds. One is to make sure that it's no wider than what you can reach halfway across if you can get all the way around it. So it's
better to be kind of long and thin.
Right. So if your reach is about a foot and a half or 2 feet to get to the center of something, you don't want that box over 4 feet wide.
Okay.
All right.
And is it best, you know, I'm envisioning this to be rather large, and I can put it right on top of my lawn, and do I use topsoil from a company, or can I use...
You can use topsoil, but I would definitely mix in a lot of compost or other kinds of organic matter. Quite often my raised beds are completely compost.
Okay.
So you don't need to necessarily, I'd rather get a truckload of compost than a truckload of topsoil.
Okay.
Yeah,
so.
You'll be better off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. And you're better, the other thing is you said a really big raised bed. Again, like Larry said, think about your reach in there, so long and narrow, or you may even prefer the looks of several small raised beds, like 4x4, rather than, 12x20 one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an idea. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Monona, it is your turn. Hi, Dan.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
You guys have great programming, so keep it up. I have two questions. I was just recommended the book Square Foot Gardening, which I think you might have just been maybe even referencing. And my first question is, I have a 4x20 foot area on the south side of my house that gets tons of sun during the day, and I'm wondering if I can put a couple of these 4x4 boxes there, where the north side of it would be my house. I would still be able to get access to all the area of the box or boxes that I put in, or if that's a bad idea. And the second thing is, I have tons of rabbits. I also have a chocolate lab, and I'm wondering what fencing material I should be thinking of.
Okay. My only question is, do you want to put these by the south side of your house? What you described is perfect.
Yeah.
Do you want to, though, put them against the foundation of the house?
Well, I could have the area is about 5 feet by 5 feet wide.
Okay.
By 20 feet long, so I have area to put maybe two or three boxes with some, 2 or 3 foot rows in between them. And I'm just wondering if it's a bad. It would be a perfect. It's a part of my. It's right next to my driveway. I'm thinking about my enthusiasm for. I'm a beginning gardener.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about my enthusiasm for gardening, and one of the things I was thinking of is if I had to pull into my driveway every day and see this, that it might give me the enthusiasm to tend it
more
often than if it was in the back. I have a big backyard.
Yeah, well, that's not bad reasoning at all.
No. I think you want to leave enough space on the sides. There's nothing. And by the way, I like the square foot gardening, that idea. I recommend it to people a lot. But if you don't have adequate space for a full 4 foot by 4 foot bed, make it 3 foot by 4 foot so that you have room on each side. I guess I just wouldn't want it up against the foundation, nor would I want it right up against the edge of the driveway. So if it can't quite fit, make it a little bit smaller because you don't have to. The idea is the 1 foot squares, not the 4 foot squares.
Right.
You follow me?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And so 1 foot on the north side of it would be enough to get it away from the foundation, in your opinion?
I think so, yeah. And it gives you room to walk back there, and whether you put a mulch or leave grass back there or whatever, it gives you room to work around it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want it right up against the driveway either. So if you leave a foot on each side between the house, and I think that would work for you.
Good luck.
Okay, and then the rabbit and/or
and then the rabbits. The dog will be well, may not be easier to keep out, especially with tomatoes. My dogs eat tomatoes. I would use rabbits. You will go through a really small space, so the raised beds will work really well because you can actually put a frame around the raised beds. But you will need like a hardware cloth where it's the squares are about a quarter inch or less in
like screen.
Diameter. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Is it wire or cloth?
Wire. Yeah. It's called hardware cloth, or I've always heard it called that.
Yeah, it's called hardware cloth, but it's really like the screens on your window.
Right, either that small or you can even go slightly bigger, but it's definitely a wire fence kind of thing.
Okay, well, thank you for your time, and I really enjoy all of your programming, Larry.
So
keep it up.
Good luck with the new garden.
Thanks a lot for calling, Dan. Appreciate it. And, you know, just for those, just a thumbnail, what's the basic principle of square foot gardening?
The idea of a square foot garden is that you look at and you plant according to a square foot. So you mark off your beds in every square foot, and then things like a tomato, which get big, you might use one plant per square foot. Things like carrots, which are much smaller, you would plant 9 in a square foot or 16, and you plant them in a grid pattern. So I like it because it works really well with children because you can tell exactly, you can actually even make planting mats and they can plant through the holes.
Yeah.
Or people that have trouble seeing, you can kind of tell. So there's all sorts of good uses for it.
And you mentioned carrots, and we have a Facebook message from Gina, who would like to start carrot seeds in the house. She says, before I plant them in the ground, since the growing time seems too long for the season, I get little carrots and would like big carrots. And when should I start the seeds and when should I plant the seedlings?
Okay. Carrots don't transplant very well.
No, they don't.
So I would not start carrots inside. I would look for cultivars that have a shorter growing season. And so hunt through the garden catalogs or the online catalogs. Look for one that is going to fit more in your growing season. And they're pretty cold tolerant, not cold. You can't plant them like you do broccoli really early, but get them out as soon as you can. And sometimes the shorter ones will mature faster too. So you may not get that 7 or 8 inch carrot.
And Tad in Appleton, this sort of relates too, wonders what is the best mix for starting seeds, probably indoors.
Right, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And then how or should I fertilize?
Okay, I like a good quality potting soil there with a lot of either perlite or vermiculite. Usually for seed starting, you want one that's called a little lighter, meaning it has a better drainage to it. And quite often you will see them even labeled as seed starting mixes. So those seem to work well. Read whatever you use for your potting mix to see if it's got fertilizer in them. Some of them do. But if it doesn't, then you want to look for fertilizing. Usually once the plants get up and get 2-3 inches high, depending on the plant, you may want to use probably a half strength liquid fertilizer.
There we go. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Soval, our on-air producer today. She's doing her usual great job. And you're doing your great job of listening in, too, and calling. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. We have some great photos posted there this morning already. And you can post some questions there as well at the Larry Mueller Show here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Barb Larson, our guest today on this edition of Garden Talk. Barb, we had an email from Jim from Washburn County. The recent tornadoes up north, mm-hmm. that would have been late summer, fall, took out a bunch of trees. And Jim is wondering what type of trees would you recommend planting that are fast growing, hardy, will grow in sandy soils, won't need to be watered often.
The perfect tree, right?
Yeah.
I'm always a little hesitant with that fast growing thing because I always say they live fast and they die fast.
Yep.
So I would be careful. I would look for, especially up in that area, I would look for things that are native up there. So it may be some of the native conifers, which would be some of the pines, especially on sandy soil. Maybe looking at some of the red pines. He doesn't say whether he wants it for big areas or what. So it makes it a little harder to guess. But I would look around and see what your native trees are up in that area and plant that. It may be even some of the I'm going to say some of the red maples up there would do it. And I would start, because he doesn't want to water it very often, start with something small. I mean, it sounds really weird that it'll take longer, but a smaller plant will reestablish after transplant much faster and won't require the years of watering that something that's bigger will. So I think you're better off.
Jerry in Menasha, on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking my call. I'm an apartment dweller, and I have a patio on which I've successfully grown a lot of herbs, but I have a problem with the containers of flowers, number one, with pansies. How do I keep them from getting leggy over a period of time? I've tried pinching them back, but that doesn't seem to do it, and they just get leggy, and then they get weaker, and eventually they poop out, and I have to replant that particular container. Number two, my question is about watering. My patio faces south all day long. I get that heavy pounding sun in warm weather all day long, and I'm always worried about whether I am overwatering my container flowers. I'm not worried about the herbs. They do very well. But overwatering my container of flowers, which are a mixture of various kinds, or underwatering, or what's the rule of thumb on watering with that tremendous onslaught of sun all day long?
Okay.
I think your second question answered your first question. So you're saying that your patio is south-facing and it gets really hot and sunny.
Yes.
Pansies hate that.
Okay.
Pansies are a cool season annual, so they grow best in spring and early summer or in late summer and fall. They're usually best planted on the north or east side because they do not like hot weather and that full beating hot sun, and that's what they will do. They will poop out in midsummer when you have that kind of weather. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes,
get to about July and they just get
really awful.
Yes.
Yeah, it's sad, and they're such a cheerful flower. I really enjoy
them. I love pansies too. I love their faces. I only get the ones with faces on them. What I would do with a patio, you don't have much choice. So probably the best is plant them in the spring, enjoy them, plant something. When they start getting really ugly looking, then put something that likes that kind of heat. So petunias, marigolds, I mean, there's a number of annuals that would go in. And then in the fall, you could even go back in September and replant pansies if you want.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And your other question, watering.
Watering.
Yeah.
I use what I call my magic water detector. I stick my finger in the pot and see how moist it is.
Okay.
And you should, I'm assuming all your pots have drainage in the bottom of them.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what you do. You want a good quality potting soil, and then just stick your finger in to about the first knuckle or a little bit farther. And if it feels nice and moist, you're in good shape.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
You're
all
welcome.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. Rebecca in Dundee, we turn to you now. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello. Well, My question is about lasagna gardening, which I heard from your show. So I read the whole book, and I got it all set up, and I finished my beds not until probably the middle of November. I finished them off altogether, and I have just a huge mix of everything from table scraps to horse manure. We have horses. And I think I have the right ratio, but I'm not seeing the cooking happening, and I'm wondering if I'm going to have to do something before I'm going to be able to plant them in the spring.
So, how are you? So, do you have the materials all in a pile, or?
Yeah, I have a few different beds, and they're all
compost.
You know, the recommended, like 3 feet across and then varying lengths.
And how deep are they?
Oh, they're all at least 24 inches.
Okay.
Because that's what I was supposed to do.
Okay.
And I mean, are they just not cooking because it's...
It's cold.
But I thought that they were going to cook anyhow.
Well, but by not getting them done until November, they probably weren't decomposing very fast, if at all. And so they really didn't start cooking, and they start really actively decomposing. The other is a lot of people, because you're basically making compost piles. That's the idea here. I understand the recommendation is 2 feet deep and that's fine. But in order for them to really have the mass, usually on a compost pile, we recommend that it be about 3 feet deep. So that may be the combination of them not really getting started early, and so that they started to heat up in there before it got really cold. I think that's, and not being quite as deep, I think that may be what's going on. I think they'll still be fine.
Would you be reluctant on, she's got horse manure in there.
Yeah, I know.
Is this vegetables or flowers that you have? Rebecca.
I'm going to be having herbs and vegetables mainly.
Yeah.
And then I have one with pine needles that I'm going to make into blueberry and raspberry.
Yeah.
Well, the pine needles will take the longest to decompose to begin with because they have so many tannins in them. Our recommendations, you're worried about, I know what you're, with the using the manure.
Yeah.
Was it fresh or was it partly decomposed?
Most of it was fresh.
Yeah. I'd be real careful with that. Our recommendations are if you put the manure in the fall, they usually consider it okay once we start the following year. It's when you put fresh manure on in the spring that we really say you need to wait a full year.
Okay.
And we actually have a fact sheet on that, using manure in the garden. So it should be okay. Yeah.
I was just thinking of, you know, it wasn't heating up and...
Yeah, and
kind of
see, that
there.
I guess I would be cautious.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean about...
Well, you have to worry about E. coli and other bacterial contamination until it decomposes really well in that manure.
Oh.
It's a problem with fresh manure. Look on, if you can look up hort.uwex.edu, or you could even Google Wisconsin Horticulture or Gardening UW Extension.
Okay.
There is a fact sheet on using manure in the garden.
Oh, well, I thought I was doing a good thing by putting that nitrogen-rich stuff on there.
Well, you
are.
It's okay. You just have to be cautious using fresh manure.
Okay.
And you definitely never want to use fresh manure and
in
put
spring.
It on in the spring the year
right.
you're using that bed. So fall is borderline.
Okay. So like if I don't plant till May, would it heat up enough to take care
You're
going to
have to just watch it and see.
Okay.
See how well it's decomposed.
Okay.
All right.
All righty. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. A listener, Lita, heard you say, Barb, that your dog eats the tomatoes in your garden. And she was calling in to say that some tomatoes may be poisonous to dogs. Do you know
what kind of tomato it is?
Yeah. I do not know.
I do not know either. And I would, I will have to have a real dog expert in, but I've actually heard of dog trainers say they use tomato fruits as even a treat for dogs.
Yeah.
So I think it's the fruits. I would, it's like any of that family. I wouldn't be chomping down on the leaves, but
someone
otherwise.
Will call in and let us know.
I know they will.
Right.
And I should say the dogs died of old age. These were my Goldens. I now have Greyhounds. So, and I keep they haven't even had the chance to get to tomatoes. I keep them away.
Dave in New Glarus, it is your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a longtime gardener, and I've got a problem I've had for the last couple of years. I have onions, just plain old yellow onions that I'm growing in raised beds.
Mm-hmm.
And I find when I pick them in the fall that a number of the tomatoes have a sort of a gelatinous layer in the onion. You often can't see it from the outside until you start to peel the onion.
Hmm. I have no idea. I'll be
that
bluntly
like rot.
Honest.
Sounds
yeah,
like
it does sound like rot.
Sounds like it's rot.
How are you drying them? How do you basically mature them? Do you let them dry up on their own?
Well, after I pick them in the fall
No, before that, when you leave them in the ground.
Yeah, I just leave them in the ground until I'm ready to pick them.
Until the tops dry off and
yes.
fall over?
Yes.
And then you pull them.
Then I pull them, and then I usually lay them out for a while in a room.
Yeah.
Let them dry.
And
I've done that sort of thing for years.
and is it the same variety of onions that do you get it in the same one, or do you grow more than one variety, and they're all doing it?
It's just one. I go to like Jung's and get their yellow tomatoes, yellow
onions. Okay. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I'm not enough of a vegetable expert to know something like that. We could try to do some follow-up on it if you want to send me an email, and I will try to contact some of our vegetable experts out there.
Kind of sounds like it's rotting. But
it does to me too. But
well, it's not a rot that you'd see the whole onion rotting.
Right.
Yeah, but there are other kinds.
It would be, the first layer or two of the onion may be fine, and the inner layer or two may be fine.
Yeah, it still sounds like either. Do you, I'm wondering if there are also some diseases that might do something like that. Do you rotate, crop rotate? Do you move your onions to different places in the garden?
I have about four raised beds, and I move them from one bed to another.
Okay, and it's happened in all the beds?
I've only done it in two different beds so far where I've had the problem.
Okay. All right. As I said, I'm guessing wild stabs in the, dark on this one.
Yeah.
So I would guess I'd look into, is it a possibility of disease? Is it a possibility of nutrients? I don't know.
You might give a call to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, Brian Huddleston. University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but you could just go online and put that in a search engine. It's going to pop up, and you can give him a call or email him. Explain it. He may well have an answer.
He may. That's a great idea.
I do have a comment for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have done the square foot gardening before.
Yeah.
And you do have to be a little careful of tomatoes when I was planting the tomatoes at the sort of the recommended spacing, I was not getting enough airflow.
Yep.
And then I'd start to get, problems from not having that adequate airflow. So I had to space them out a little farther.
Yep. Yeah. I mentioned tomatoes, but I usually space them wider than 1 foot, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just because of the size of the tomatoes.
More like 2 feet.
Yeah. Yep. Good comment.
Okay. Thanks a
Thank
lot.
You.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Sorry,
for...
can't help.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dick in Bark River, Michigan, on to you now. Hi, Dick.
Hello. I guess I've heard there's no stupid questions, but I from the beginning of the show, raised gardens on your lawn, why wouldn't it be a real good idea to till the lawn upon which you're building your raised garden?
You could, but that's a lot more work.
But then we require less compost or...
Well, I mean, part of the reason what we've been talking about with the raised beds is it's more than just, you know, having not having a garden in the soil. In many cases, it's because you raise the height of the garden, so it's a little easier to garden, too. You don't have to bend over as far.
So most vegetables or flowers, root systems, do not need a depth of more than 12 feet, 12 inches, say?
No, that's true.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
One more idea about the trees. Most people, a lot of people live in rural areas. If you had a tornado or storm damage, you can rent tree spades, and most people got neighbors give you good-sized trees. I mean, it's...
Get something from your neighbor.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Get some from your neighbor.
From their woods or whatever, and it's a local tree, so it's probably going to do well.
Right.
Yeah, makes good sense.
Yep.
Thank you, Dick, for calling. Appreciate it. Natalie emailed us, says, I love growing herbs, especially since the deer and rabbits usually leave them alone. I've tried starting rosemary from seed several times. I've had no success at that. They didn't even germinate. Any tips?
This is another one that I'd have to look up. I couldn't do it off the top of my head. I've never grown rosemary or tried to grow it from seed. So I would do some research. I could check online or other kind of good quality references. There are a lot of really good herb references, and see what it takes, because they may require some particular kind of... there may be some trick to them, especially if they're not germinating. It may have to do with the temperature that they have to have.
Yep.
Or the light.
Or the light. Or both.
Or both, yeah.
Mary and Almond, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, both of you. This is a wonderful show. I just love it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We just got back from Costa Rica, so I'm now thinking of spring. And it's a vegetable question, so I don't know if this is something you can answer, but when I plant peppers, sweet peppers next to jalapenos, I never get a hot pepper. Do you know what's happening?
Wait a minute. Run that by me again.
You have sweet peppers, meaning like a bell pepper kind of thing.
Pepper.
And you plant it next to a jalapeno, your jalapenos aren't hot.
They're mild. Yeah, they're even some are just as sweet as my bell peppers. Do you think there's like cross-pollination?
Well, even if they cross-pollinated, I don't think it would make that, it wouldn't affect the fruits that much. It would affect if you saved the seeds. But, you know, this is in that category of, okay, so then don't plant them next to each other.
I know, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking I'm going to do next time. Because it's like every time this happens, I'm like, what is going on? You know?
There's no reason for it.
No, Mary. I can't think of it. So, but I would definitely just move them apart.
Yeah, I'll try that.
So that they're not, you know, friendly with each other.
Yeah, okay. And I can offer you a little suggestion on my part. When I planted onions, the sets team, I do get those rot layers like he was talking about. If I plant plants, you know, like from youngs, they tend to be fine. But the sets team, they kind of, there's like two layers that might be good and then a rotten layer and then maybe the core is okay or something. So I wonder if it's not just the sets that are the issue.
Okay. All right.
Could be.
Thanks for your input.
Don from Illinois on onions says, about your listener who had the onion problem, my grandmother used to say, never let the August sun shine on your onions. Get them out before.
Okay.
Well, that might be true, though. They might be ready earlier, right?
Right, yeah, right. Absolutely. Yep, we have a lot of smart listeners, so a lot of gardening experience out there.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your show.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Thank you. Appreciate it. And Andrea in Milwaukee. On to you. Hi, Andrea.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call. We are huge NPR fans and big gardeners, so we've hit the jackpot today by you taking the call. Thank you. This question is about a tree sapling, and it's sort of a sweet story. Several years ago, we gave our mother a ginkgo tree for Mother's Day. She loves ginkgo trees. And it's grown fine, everything's fine with it. But after 45 years, my parents have moved out of their home, the home we grew up in, to a much smaller home. And I don't know why, but this huge ginkgo tree, for the first time, threw up a little sapling, a little shoot. And I didn't know if we could take it or not, if it would be successful. Long story short, I did take it. And I put it in a pot with some really good potting soil and mix and root hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And it did indeed root. And then just now, though, it's throwing out some leaves on the top, which is great. But I cherish this little thing, and I want to plant it in their new house. And I don't want it to... I think we have green thumbs, but I'm worried about it rotting, or I don't really know what to do I don't really want to fertilize it too much. I want to be able to put it in the ground. I don't know when to put it in the ground, if it should be next year, in the spring, or wait a whole nother year. I really need some advice on how to handle this little sweet little spike of a little stick.
Where do you have it now? Like in the living room or something?
It's in the house, and it's in an east-facing window.
Okay. I would, since you've got it indoors, it's starting to leaf out, I would keep it like a house plant for right now. And in the April or early May, start to acclimate it to the outdoors, which means you take it out. Put it in a sunny...
We have a sunroom.
That's perfect. Start it in the sunroom and then take it outdoors for part of the day in a shady spot, out of the wind, and then bring it back in. And then, go kind of that good in and out where you're supposed to do with anything as you move it outside. Most of us don't. But in this case, you want to be really careful. So I would do that so you get it ready for outdoors. Once you get it acclimated to be outdoors, then you can plant it in the ground.
So this year it can go in the ground?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would definitely, because I wouldn't want it to go through another winter indoors.
Okay. And then my dad is up of the thought that we should fertilize it, but I'm kind of afraid to do that.
You wouldn't fertilize it now.
No. You've got a good potting soil, right? Good quality potting soil. No, I wouldn't fertilize it unless the leaves are really pale. And then if I did it, I would use a liquid fertilizer, and I'd only do like half strength.
Okay. Okay. And the leaves are very, vibrant green. And
yep.
I'm just worried that it's going to peter out quickly, and then that'll be it. And I'm just wondering that I think... So is there any way to slow it down until the spring?
No, not really. Well, keep it in cooler if it's a little cooler in there, but it's got to have, it's leafing out. You've got to it's out of dormancy, so you've got to keep it moist, not too wet, because you don't want those new roots to rot, and you need to keep it in sunlight.
And moist is not the knuckle test. It's moist on top, too?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be moist to the touch. It's the what we talked about before. Stick your finger in the potting soil.
Oh, it is. That's the moist test.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because if you keep it wet on top, it could be too wet.
And rotting the roots. Yeah, that's my other concern.
And be sure to fence it when you take
it
out.
Yes, that was the other thought.
That's a good idea.
Otherwise, your rabbits are going to just
have a day with it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Not even a day. It'd take them about a minute.
Yep. Yep.
You're right. And we have a lot of them in that yard.
Oh, yeah. Then you definitely want to protect it.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it becoming a big, majestic ginkgo like the other one.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, that's a great story.
Must have quite a green thumb to be able to do that to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. Rita in Glenwood City, we're going to get to you in just a minute. Just to remind you as you listen in today, Barb Larson is our guest. She's a horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County, and you can join in if you have a question. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. For this edition of Garden Talk, we visit with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. And Rita in Glenwood City has a question for you, Barb. So let's go there. Hi, Rita.
Hi. I just got a quick question. I would like to know if there's any way that I could grow my own sweet potato vines. Start them now?
You're growing them from seed?
Well, what do they come from?
Well, they can come from slips, which are little starts, or they can come from seed. So I think you check with the catalogs and see which one you can find. But you can start these on your own. What you should look, I'm sure now is a little early to start them. In fact, now is a little early to start most seeds. You need to double check on the package or, you know, from wherever you're purchasing them and see. They'll all say on there how long it takes to go from seed to either transplant, or they'll also should, for the vegetables, they'll tell you when harvest is. But then you want to count backwards from the time you want to plant them outside. So something like a sweet potato, which is not cold, doesn't like those cold temperatures, you're probably not going to move it outside until probably close to Memorial Day. So then you want to kind of count backwards to see when you want to start it to have it ready up to the size you want outside or in, around Memorial Day. But yeah, you can start them at home.
Oh, cool. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Laura from Summit, Wisconsin. That's in Waukesha County. It says, I have a quick question on growing salad greens and spinach. My past experience is that the romaine and green mix seeds produce better salads. Could it be the soil? Also for spinach, what is recommended for fertilizer and when can I plant in the spring?
Okay, so bitter salads, bitter greens could be the nutrients in what's in the soil. So you may want, give it another try, move it to another spot. We've talked a lot about raised beds today. If you're not using that, you might try that. Also, some of these, I just saw a small romaine in a catalog, and certainly the green mixes can even be grown in containers and pots. So you could try that. And let's see, spinach, recommended fertilizer, probably is a side dressing. All fertilization, I always suggest you always start with a soil test to begin with.
Yeah.
So that you know where you're going from to, because you may not need the phosphorus and potassium, the last two numbers in there. So if you haven't had a soil test done, I would do that. And then when to plant in the spring. Spinach is very cold tolerant, so especially in Waukesha County in that area, you could probably plant it in April.
There you go.
Does that sound really early? But that sounds good, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And Chrissy in Barneville, you have a question for us. Hi.
Yes, hi. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yes, great. Say, I have a question about my beloved angel's trumpet, or they are otherwise known as Bergmansias.
Yes.
I was wondering, I've had these plants in big pots for about 5 years. We live in Barneville, Wisconsin, so naturally we bring them in the wintertime. And I was wondering if how to prune those in the wintertime and if I should cut them way back.
I don't think I would cut them way back in the winter. They're
okay.
You know, they're pretty much going into almost a semi-dormancy.
Okay.
So if you're going to cut them back, for a lot of these things that we move out in the springtime and then bring them back into the in for the winter because they're not hardy, the best time to cut them back is usually right before you take them outside in the spring, because
right.
that's when they're going to go back into active growth.
Okay, and they are pretty tall. They're like 5 feet tall. And
wow.
Right now they're beautiful.
Wow.
I adore them. They're my babies. But I also had one other quick question about the leaves. I noticed this year, and maybe it happened before and I just didn't notice, there's like a residue type of stickiness on the leaf.
Sounds like you got bugs.
Bugs, yeah.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
Yes.
Yeah. So it could be, I'd look for scale, which are like little bumps on the leaves that are kind of abnormal. Look especially for right in the leaf axils where the leaves meet the stems. By the way, I should mention that if you get stickiness, that's called honeydew, and honeydew is bug excrement, okay? Bug poop.
Oh, my Lord.
And it's from a sucking insect. So they suck sap, which is sweet, and that's why it's that shiny sticky is because of that. So
I've never noticed it before.
Yeah.
So I think this is the first time. Do you know where I would have gotten something like that?
You know, you have these outdoors, and so these kinds of insects are all over outdoors. And when they're outside, there's all sorts of beneficial insects that would help keep their populations in check. When you bring them indoors, there aren't any of those beneficial insects flying around your house, probably.
Yeah, I've never noticed it.
And so those populations can go up. Well, I mean, it happens just periodically. You'll get it. And once you find them, depending on what it is, usually an insecticidal soap works best.
Okay, wonderful. Well, gosh, thank you so much. I really appreciate talking to you. It's been wonderful.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim in River Falls, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I've been listening to your program for probably 25 years or more. It's the first time I've called, but I've enjoyed those 25 years of listening.
Good.
So I had a question. Someone earlier called about the lasagna gardening, and I had listened to that on your program last year, and so our garden is probably 60 by 30 feet or so, and I hauled in, probably 60 yards of decomposed horse manure and pine shavings from a horse arena.
Okay.
And then, so I put that down first, and then I got about, I think I got 12 round bales and maybe used 10 of them of kind of decomposed hay that I put on top of that. But you know, we usually have corn and a variety of vegetables, and I'm just wondering if it's going to be a decent substrate to plant into with the hay on top. We had such a I put that down in September.
Okay.
And we've had such a dry fall too. My wife said, "Well, maybe we should have watered it down to help it decompose." But like with corn and some of the other plants, I'm wondering, if we plant into that, if we first time we have a windstorm, if they're just going to pull right over, if the roots will, if it's too loose, or if we should kind of try to get down below that and actually plant, through the cardboard or something.
Well, I think the first question is I take a look, and it should be pretty well decomposed by the time you're ready to plant, especially corn, since you plant corn when it's pretty warm. I would take a close look at that first. Is it hot?
Yeah.
From the other lady, I was wondering is your steaming?
Think so. I don't think, it's probably with the hand tap 18 to 24 inches deep, but I don't think it's particularly hot underneath the hay is just kind of,
laying on top.
There,
And I think hay would kind of lay on top there because it acts more as a mulch. So, I know this isn't the lasagna gardening method, but you may have to mix that hay in there a little bit so that it'll decompose a little better. Obviously can't do it now, but you may have to do that once you get in closer into the spring.
Okay, or put maybe more dirt on top.
Or put some dirt on top, put compost on top, some other kind of organic matter on top.
And then you think the roots should hold well enough that they wouldn't...
It depends on how loose it is overall, how loose the soil is overall.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to judge it yourself because I can't be there to judge it. So.
Okay. Then the other question I had is... I've had some, creeping Charlie in my lawn, and that's not a big deal. And I thought that's what I had this year, too, but I think I got some garlic mustard in. What's the best? I really don't want that to take off and get, because I've got woodland and stuff, too, and I don't want that to spread into there. What would be the best method, either herbicides or What would you recommend for control of that?
Well, garlic mustard, the best way to control it, especially if you only have a few, is to pull it, hand pull it, because it's a biennial.
Uh-huh.
So if you saw a few last year, you should start seeing the seeds, the flower stalks should start coming up in spring, and it has a white flower to it. So pull those out and get rid of them, and don't let them just lay there. Even with just the flowers, because they'll still release seed.
Okay.
So that'll tell you for sure also if you have garlic mustard.
So how do you pull them. So where do you go with them?
Garbage, you could burn them, any of those kinds of things. Just don't pull it out and let them lay there.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. When do you start seeds indoors?
You have to count back, depends on the different seeds. The ones that take a long time to go from germination to when they're ready, impatiens are that way. That's the one that I remember off the top of my head. Usually it's like late January. Most people start their seeds too early, and then they get those tall, leggy plants, and they don't do as well.
Yeah.
So it's really important to look at when you want to plant them outside, then read your seed packet or your information really carefully. And if you don't want to do math, just get a calendar out and count backwards.
Count backwards.
And then that's when you want to start them.
There you go. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension in Kenosha County. Our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk. We visit with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in today. And if you have a question, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And a photo or a question there, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Email message from Peter: do you need a soil test before planting in compost?
If you're using a municipal compost or a commercial compost, just ask them, because usually they will test it and they'll be able to do it. In general, probably not.
Yeah.
So,
Frank in Cedarburg, you are next. Hi, Frank.
I have a question in regards to using Roundup. Will Roundup eventually contaminate the soil and keep the seeds from germinating in the soil?
Roundup does not affect seed germination. I know we'll get all sorts of emails or comments, but the standard law is that it does not contaminate the soil. Now, this is just plain glyphosate, plain Roundup. Okay? There are sometimes the Roundup brand now is being used for a number of different products, and some of them are longer acting, so they will prevent other things from growing in the soil for a longer period of time. So if it's just that plain glyphosate, then it's supposed to be, it's considered that it only affects the plants, not the soil.
Well, okay, thank you for answering that. I was wondering about it.
Yeah, and it's not a seed, it's not a herbicide that works on seed, prevents seed germination.
No,
anyway.
Leaves and stems.
Yep.
Thanks for calling, Frank. Ray in Lena, Wisconsin. On to you. Hi.
Hi, I've never had a garden before, and I was wondering if you could give me some tips on the best vegetables to start with and the best way just to get into gardening.
How big an area do you have?
I thought I'd start small, something with maybe 10 by 20, about the size of a room.
That's not small.
That's pretty good size.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would even start smaller than that.
Oh, okay.
Because I think the biggest problem new gardeners have is they start too big. And then if you're frustrated, you have trouble keeping up with it, and you end up with all weeds by August, then you can get really frustrated. So start small. You ask what kind to, and it should be in full sun. That for vegetables, that's really important. You should find a spot with good drainage, close to where you have water, because you don't want to be hauling water way out someplace. And then what to plant would be, what do you and your family like to eat? So you always grow what you would like.
Tomatoes, probably.
Tomatoes are easy. Peppers are easy. Green beans are easy. Most of our vegetables are pretty
easy.
Peas, yeah.
Peas fresh out of the garden.
Yeah, my favorite, especially for beginning gardeners, the book is a UW Extension book. It's actually a book out of Illinois Extension. It's called Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. And my guess is you could probably find it used someplace. I believe our publications, Wisconsin Publications, probably has it available. Wisconsin Extension Publications, Illinois Extension Publications probably has it. The author is Chuck Voigt, V-O-I-G-T. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great beginner reference. In fact, it's the one I pull first when people ask me gardening questions about vegetables.
Oh, thank you so, so much.
Okay.
Have a wonderful year, and I will have a great taste of you.
Yeah, okay, you're going to have to call us back and let us know how this gardening business is going for you, Ray.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep listening.
All right. Yeah, 10 by 10 might be more like it.
Yeah. 4 by 8. That's what I tell people. Start with a raised bed and about 4 by 8. That's usually plenty.
Artis in Jefferson. On to you now. Hi, Artis.
Hi there. My husband was the one with the green thumb, so this is actually something he came up with. When he first started gardening in 77, he used the tomato cages that are sold in the market, and they were way too small at the top, too small at the bottom. So he made his own with a metal mesh that he bought, and I don't remember where the squares were like 6 inches.
Yep.
He made them 18 inches across. And then cut the bottom horizontal piece so he had points to stick in the ground, attached each one with one stake to keep them up, and you should have seen the plants he got. They were huge. And he generally put the cages about a foot apart so you could walk between each one. And he had the most beautiful garden. And he passed away 5 years ago. My son and I can't match them. We still use the same cages, but they just don't grow like he could get them to grow.
Yeah.
But he found that 18-inch cage worked great.
He may have been doing, have you been adding organic matter to your garden?
Yeah.
And he may have been doing things like that.
No, but I think he got the idea out of our ortho book.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think that's where he got it. And he goes, let's try that next year. And the plants are just huge.
I always recommend never use those little tomato cages. I always make my own. And mine are usually closer to 2 feet in diameter.
Okay.
And I use big, basically wire fencing and rebar.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And his pepper plants got to be like 3 feet tall and I don't know how many feet across. And one pepper would barely fit in the palm of your hand.
Yep.
He planted emerald gold.
Yep.
And they were huge.
Yep. Oh. Obviously had a great green thumb.
He did. I don't.
Well, thanks for calling, Artis. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. We had a Facebook message from Ben. I never hear anyone talk about cold frames to start plants. I use them and it's like having my own greenhouse to give the started plants all the possible sunshine and heat like a greenhouse. Construction very simple, using old wood-framed storm windows.
Yep, and I absolutely agree with him. I think cold frames are one of those things that are way underused, and I highly recommend them. So I agree with Ben.
And a Facebook message from Stephen. I have a question about trap crops. We use Hubbard squash for trap crops for our cucurbits, but are looking for one for our brassicas, as our bok choy just gets destroyed every year.
Okay. What he's talking about, a trap crop is where you have a sacrificial crop, basically, that will draw a lot of the insects that can damage the crop, the plant you want. So he's looking for something with the bok choy. I would use mustards, same family. And so you could use one of those around the edge. The other thing I would do with the brassicas, which are the coal crops, I would use floating row covers. And we have Ben talking about cold frames, and people don't use those enough. I agree. The other thing I think vegetable gardeners don't use enough is floating row covers.
Yeah.
And so you physically keep those critters out. And he's probably the biggest problem are the cabbage worms. And there's several different kinds. And so if you can keep those adult moths, those female moths out of there by just physically keeping them out, that'll take care of it. You won't even need a trap crop.
Anthony in Oakdale, your turn. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in the heart of cranberry country, and the soil that I plan on starting my garden in, it's mostly sand.
Mm-hmm.
Would you suggest that I bring in black dirt from somewhere else, or that I control the way my plants grow by adding my own fertilizer, like stuff you buy at the store?
No, I suggest that you bring in compost.
Compost.
Yes. Organic. You need organic matter that it will help in a sandy soil. It will help give you some nutrients. It will help hold the nutrients, and it will help hold moisture and water there.
You might even go with a raised bed.
Yes. Yeah, raised bed. Especially if it's really sandy, you could go with a raised bed. But
right.
Compost is just incredibly useful. In sandy soils, as I mentioned, it helps to hold moisture and add nutrients. In where most of the southeastern part of the state where I garden or where I work with gardeners, our soils tend to be more clay, and the compost will help break that up so that you have better drainage. So definitely either raised beds and or organic matter.
All right, and real quick, so you suggest I would start, I have a high part and a low part. You suggest I start not in the valley where water could collect or anything like that?
Well, if you have sandy soil, I don't know how much water will collect unless you have a high water table. How big of a garden are you looking at?
Well, I was listening, and you guys suggested for a new gardener to start small.
Yes.
So I'm going to start small, like maybe 10 by 10.
Okay. And, yes, in a high, probably a higher part because you don't want things to be too wet. But remember that full sun is probably is really important, too. And close to where you can get to it and close to water source and all those kinds of things, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. For calling. Appreciate it.
Lots of new gardeners. That's
yeah,
great.
That's great. I love that. Susie in Springfield, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Susie.
Hi, good morning. I am a master gardener, and I think what that means is I finally realize how much I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Congratulations, too.
Thank you.
That's great.
I love the program. It's so valuable in so many ways. One of the things that we're not taught, and I have not found an opportunity to learn, is landscape design. I love plants. I get zone lust, and of course I always push the zones because we're 5B, 6A here,
mm-hmm.
and I'm from Maryland originally, so I'm always zone pushing, trying to get Maryland plants from zone 7 to grow here, with some success. But I don't know how to lay out a garden to make it look stunning all year round. And I'd like to do it was a portage garden, a French garden, which means incorporating edibles with ornamentals,
yep.
which has now mm-hmm. lately become a fad, which I kind of kind of funny because it's a very old traditional French garden. What is the best way for me to learn good fundamentals of landscape design using unusual plants in a portage type of methodology? Tough one.
Well, this is the art part of horticulture. You know,
right.
Horticulture is the art and science of growing plants. So this is the art part. So I found, and I'll freely admit, I don't have that artistic eye for a beautiful design. Some people do and some don't. I would look around for classes, tours. I always recommend to people go on garden tours in the spring and summer and take pictures of things you like the looks of. And then try to reproduce them that way. I think sometimes that works better than anything else. Talk to people. And try. Don't be afraid of trying.
We have some extension publications, too.
There are some on landscaping, but they're not going to especially incorporate the plants. I mean, when you're really looking at landscape design, though, a lot of it is you don't think plants first. You think shapes. You think all those things. And then just as you're putting things in, incorporate the edible plants in with it. So I wish I had a better answer for you, but I really don't. No, other than it's kind of trial and error, and I'm sure with Springfield there's lots of kinds of classes and other things available in that area too.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I can't give you a really easy, quick answer. I don't think it has one.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. There's there are consultants out there now too.
There are, and
you might spend. You might look at consultants, and I'm just there's some names that are escaping me now. I don't even want to bring it up.
And there are some that are where they're more more garden designers. They're not landscape architects that are looking at big landscapes and. Instead, they kind of specialize on doing some of these kinds of specialty gardens. And, you know, she's from middle of Illinois, so I'm sure in central Illinois there are people that do that kind of thing. So
absolutely. On to Judith in Milwaukee. Hi, Judith.
Hi. Thanks for this program.
Sure.
I'm hoping that your guest may have some suggestions for me on ground cover, hardy ground cover that could be grown from seed. I've killed off by covering with black plastic for a full calendar year an area between the sidewalk and the street in front of my house that is really difficult for me to keep grass growing in. And I want to put in something that is low. I don't want to spend the money on lots of individual plants.
Mm-hmm.
And the very, very ideal kind of thing would be some sort of seed I could maybe sow on top of the snow and have that, you know, worked into the soil by the time it warms up this spring.
Okay. Well, is it in full sun?
Yes, because unfortunately a great big tree that had shaded that spot died and was taken down by the city. So, yes. Now it is in full sun.
Okay. And you mentioned that you couldn't grow grass there very well, you just don't want to mow out there?
I don't. It was both, really. I live kind of on a terraced site, and I would have to literally carry my lawnmower downstairs.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's kind of... so here I'm going off the top of my head, what can I come up with? And, of course, I'm not coming up with a lot of – actually, believe it, and people will hate this. What I came up with first were violets.
Oh, I'd be happy to have those grow. There were some mixed in there with a lot of other really ugly, weedy things.
Yeah, and I like them.
I do, too, actually. I don't have any trouble with them.
Now, you would need to probably start with some plants or find somebody that's got some violets, and because a lot of people have violets and be happy to get rid of them. But the old regular purple violets and plant those in. Violets produce two kinds of flowers, the really showy ones that you see, and then later in the season they have ones that aren't very showy that are kind of under the leaves. The thing with violets is that they are seed spitters. So the seeds, when they're mature, get flung out from the plant, and they will spread really quickly. So that might be one of your best and least expensive options, would be something like violets.
But a little labor-intensive
to begin with a little bit, but you know, you wouldn't even have to put that many plants in to start.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably get them from a friend or something. I'm not a great fan. You mentioned putting the seeds on top of the soil. I'm not a great fan of that, or on top of the soil, on top of the snow,
mm-hmm.
because I think more than anything else, you're feeding the birds. That's an awful lot of.
That's all right, too.
Yeah, but, you know, for what you put out in doing that, I don't think that's the best option.
Okay, but so just in general, is it not very practical to think about ground cover that you grow from seed?
I'm not thinking of ones. I know there are ground covers that can be grown from seed. I just am not. None are coming quickly to mind.
Okay, I'll do a little more internet search.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Jean in Menominee, hello to you.
Oh, not too bad. Just loving all that snow. It's good for our gardens, though. Yay.
Yeah, it's good for the garden. Yeah.
I live out in the country, and the thought I have my garden is where an old calf barn was. So I have good soil, but I want to keep it up. What do I keep adding to it?
Adding to the existing soil. Have you ever had a soil test done?
No.
You need to have a soil test done. You need to take a soil test. And so it's, well, obviously you're not going to do that right now, but after the snow melts and you can get out and dig, just go several places, probably 8 to 10 in your garden, dig down about 4 to 6 inches where the roots would be, and get out a trowel full of soil, put it in a clean bucket, mix it up, and send it into the University of Wisconsin Soil Testing Lab. And all the information is online. Just Google UW Soil Lab, and it'll all come up. You can send it in a clean zip-top bag. You don't need a special bag or anything like that. For a home garden, it's, I'll remember, I think it's $15. It's either 12 or 15, I should remember, but I don't right now. And send it in. They'll tell you your soil pH. They'll tell you whether or not what you need to add. You give them what kind of crops you're growing in there, and they'll make a recommendation.
Okay. And I also put all my shredded paper out there.
Yeah, and that's fine as long as you have enough green stuff in there to help break that down. Okay.
Oh, I've got like foot-long night crawlers.
Okay. All right. But definitely, you know, have a soil test done.
I will. And okay. I have one thing to tell that lady before me. I've used a couple of plants called steppables.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And those spread real fast.
Right.
You know, and some of them have pretty yellow flowers, and I've also used, like, thyme. Thyme spreads real fast.
And that actually is a great suggestion because thyme could be done from seed.
Yep. It's so pretty, and you got all those different flavors.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's great.
Yeah, that's
a great. And it's really nice, and if you're really good, you can probably harvest up till November off of it.
Right, right. Good suggestion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jean. Thanks a lot for calling. Annette is worried about her hostas and other perennials. The really dry fall and winter. Now we're having below zero temperatures in River Falls. What can we expect in the spring? Don't know.
I was going to say, I have no idea. We just wait and see.
It's actually, you know, I'm glad to see the snow out there now. I mean, in southern Wisconsin, we've had no snow, and it's nice. It's moisture, but it also keeps the frost from going down.
Well, it insulates, which is really the important thing, especially in southern Wisconsin, so that soil doesn't go between freezing and thawing, and that's what pops our perennials out of the ground, and we get damage.
Barb, it's always a pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again?
I would be happy to.
Great. We will have her back. Barb Larson, horticulture educator. She works out of the UW Extension office in Kenosha County, and she comes by every so often to sit down with you and with me and talk about our gardens, and it's great to have her, and she will be back, and we will do this again with her. Just to take a look ahead, Monday at 11 o'clock, actually for the hour and a half, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody will be joining us, and they'll be here to answer your questions, and of course, when they come by, we talk aches, pains, sprains and strains. Say that real fast, 5 times. And they're really good at it, so we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.